What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be taking a trip down memory lane and talking about potentially the savior of the Washington Wizards franchise, a guy that's come in a year ago to this date, May 24th, 2023, and completely changed the trajectory of this franchise. You know, when he took over as president of basketball, president of Monumental Basketball, Michael Winger looked at the Wizards and said, "This team is the definition of mid, a laughing stock of the league, a team in purgatory, a team paying Bradley Beal $50 million a year, a team expected to pay Kyle Kuzma and Chris Haspersingas $30 million a year." And he came in here, and a year later, the outlook on the team is completely different. I mean, he owns the second pick. He's added extra draft capital. He's moved off of bloated salaries. Michael Winger has come in here and quickly made his presence known, quickly turned this franchise around. And look, it's still going to take some time. The Wizards won't be contenders for 3 to 4 years. But this is a good start. And I feel like it's only right that a year to the date of his hire, I sit down here and talk about everything that he's done to build a really good contender, a team that's going to be competitive for a long time instead of just making an appearance in the play-in tournament. He set the team up for great success in the future, and it's only right to talk about it. So this episode is kind of just going to be a dive into that chronological order of Michael Winger's biggest moves since being hired as president of Monumental Basketball 1 year to the date on May 24th, 2023. Look, the first thing that Michael Winger did here was he didn't gut the front office, but he made some changes. Obviously, a lot of Tommy Shepard's guys left with Tommy Shepard when he was fired. And that's the start. And before we even talk about Winger, I know a lot of people don't like Ted Leonsis, owner of the Wizards. A lot of people, especially because of what he tried to do in the move from Washington to Virginia, they've soured on him. And it's fair to think that. But you also got to look at it on a brighter side at some capacity and say, look, he did take a while, but he finally realized that a rebuild was necessary. He finally realized Tommy Shepard was a problem, and he moved on. And the Wizards wouldn't be where they are right now if he didn't move on from Tommy and hire Michael Winger. So it starts with Ted. You have to give him credit there. Now, when you talk about Michael Winger, bring him in on May 24th. He immediately hires Will Dawkins on June 5th as his general manager, his number two guy. Will Dawkins basically makes a lot of the decisions for the team, and Winger's right there to advise him as a higher up. And they discuss everything, I'm sure, together. But it was big to bring in a guy of Will Dawkins, 15 years with the Thunder, the last three as VP of player personnel. Very, very smart basketball mind, learned from the great Sam Presti. Home run hire. And if you look at what Dawkins has done a year into the job, you know, moving on from Beal and KP, signing Kuz and Denny to really, really team-friendly contract extensions, he's been great. And right up there with him is Travis Schlenk, who is kind of under the radar and people don't talk about him enough. Former GM in Atlanta, did a solid job building them up to a decent team after, he had that hole after Al Horford and all of them had that run, and then you have to get Trae Young, and he was a big part of that. So bringing in Schlenk and Dawkins to the front office, those are two of his moves that now don't really get talked about enough, not flashy hires, but they've been terrific in their roles so far in kind of helping Winger turn this franchise around. And now you get into the big moves, and the biggest move of the offseason and the biggest move of Winger's tenure easily has been trading Bradley Beal to the Phoenix Suns. This is a move that the Wizards and Wizards fans, I should say, wanted for years. Never thought we'd see the day. I thought Bradley Beal would retire a Wizard. Not that I wanted him to retire a Wizard, but I never saw Ted Leonsis giving up on Brad being a superstar. I never thought we would even fire Tommy in the first place, and Tommy made the mistake of valuing Brad as a superstar when he's maybe a fringe all-star and nothing more than that. Certainly not a number one option on a contending team, if you can even call them that. And certainly not a guy that should be making $50 million a year. The Wizards made him all of that and more. They made him the face of the franchise. And that was when Tommy Shepard decided to build around Bradley Beal, that's when Tommy Shepard decided that his run as GM was going to end eventually. And look, 2 years after Tommy Shepard signed Bradley Beal to one of the most preposterous, overvalued contracts in professional sports history, 5 years, $251 million, Winger came in and him and Dawkins talked with Beal, and they pretty much immediately decided, like, look, Brad, you kind of have told us you don't necessarily want to be here, and we don't necessarily see you being here moving forward. So let's go on with it now. Let's not, you know, wait another year. Let's get you out of here. And it worked out for both sides at the time. Like, Washington wanted to move on from Brad. Brad was kind of fed up with losing in Washington, wanted to play in the playoffs and contend, and the Wizards didn't want to pay him. I mean, I couldn't believe they actually found three teams willing to sit down with Bradley Beal and like engage in, you know what, we really want to pay you $47 to $51 million for the next 3 to 4 years. Sit down with us so we can compete and entice you to play for our team. That's crazy to me still, that teams were willing to trade for his contract. But look, Dawkins and Winger acted quickly with this. They said, look, we're not going to have him here for the future. Let's get him gone if we can. And you're not going to capitalize on his max value, because that was 2 years ago when he was terrific, efficient, and wasn't on the worst contract ever. Now, you probably got him at the lowest value he's been at over that two-year span. But nonetheless, the main goal of this trade was to move off of Beal. You could have given me a bag of donuts. If I wasn't paying Bradley Beal $251 million and I can move on with my rebuild, that's fine by me. And I honestly didn't think they would get much in this trade return, just because of the fact that Brad had a no-trade clause. He was getting paid $50 million a year, and he got to decide where he wanted to go. The Wizards kind of had to work with that. So the fact that they were able to get anything remotely decent in return was great. Look, that no trade clause is disgusting. If you don't know, Brad could veto any trade involving himself. So he basically gave Dawkins and Winger three teams. He gave them Phoenix, Miami, and Milwaukee. He said, I would like to play for these teams, and I would like to sit down with them. And the Wizards said, okay, have a meeting with them so they can kind of recruit you. And it looked like Phoenix came up on top. And once Winger heard Phoenix and Dawkins heard Phoenix, they're like, okay, bet, we'll work on an agreement right now. So an agreement to game together pretty quickly. This all kind of happened, I think it was June 15th. Woj or Shams came out with a report that the Wizards and Brad are working with other teams on a trade. And then, you know, 6 days later, he was gone. And here's the full trade details. And a lot of this has changed in terms of future trades and stuff. And I know this trade was kind of morphed into the Bilal trade and all that, but I'm just going to take it for the trade at that time. Okay. So the Wizards traded Bradley Beal, Isaiah Todd, and Jordan Goodwin to the Phoenix Suns in exchange for Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, 5 second-round picks in 2024, 25, 26, 27, and 30, and 4 first-round pick swaps in 24, 26, 28, and 30. So altogether, 5 second-round picks, 4 swaps, Shamet and Paul. Essentially for Beal. I mean, you gave up Todd and Goodwin. Goodwin's better than Todd, but those guys were, you know, fringe bench players that weren't going to be a part of the plans in the future. So just kind of throw-ins to make it work. And look, with Phoenix getting swept in round one, there's so many questions surrounding their current roster. They might break up KD, Book, Beal in the next 2 or 3 years. Those first-round pick swaps in 24 and 26, you know, obviously this year the Wizards won't use the pick swap. And in 2026, I think the Suns will still have that core, so no. But in 2028 and 2030, when they have no draft picks and those guys, their current core is probably disbanded or aren't at that level, the Wizards will hopefully be competing. And it'll be like a Thunder situation where the Wizards are in the playoffs, and yet they're going to still have a lottery pick because they can swap with the Suns. So don't get caught up on the fact that they aren't going to use half the pick swaps, because when they do use them, it's going to be jumping hopefully from like 24 to like 8 or 10. And that's a big deal, especially even if you don't draft the player, if you're trading that pick for somebody to help you in your process of contending. So those are huge. And then you talk about the second round picks, and oh, the Wizards don't ever hit on a second round pick. No team, like, second round picks are like a 1 out of 15 hit rate. Like, nobody hits on second round picks. There's so many things I can say to people that say that. Number one, it does, like, you need as many darts as you can throw at the board when you're a team like the Wizards. In I would say a small market. Like DC's a big market, but in terms of NBA landscapes, nobody's like, "Oh, let me go to DC." That's not the case. So you need to build through the draft, like Winger has said from day one, and the second round picks help you. And if you have 5 second round picks and three suck, but two are pretty good, and you can have them on your roster, that's very cheap salaries for, probably competent bench players. And if you're good at drafting, like the Wizards front office has shown after 1 year, those could be valuable. I mean, look, Nikola Jokic, 41st pick, future Hall of Famer, three-time MVP, Draymond Green, future Hall of Famer. And those are the big names, but like people hit on second round picks. Look at Andrew Nembhard for the Pacers right now. 35th pick. Nobody really talked about him, or 30th pick, wherever he was picked, 34, 31, I think. Oh, second round picks don't hit. Andrew Nembhard has been arguably the best bench player and now starts for the Pacers in these playoffs. You can find talent anywhere if you're good at your job. And these second round picks are huge. Not to mention that you can move a bunch of these picks later down the line at trade deadlines and stuff when you're contending for solid bench players. We see it, teams do it all the time. So those second round picks are big. Landry Shamet was kind of a salary filler. The Suns really didn't see him, didn't like him in that 1 year in Phoenix, wanted to move him. So the Wizards said, fine, we'll take him. Because you couldn't. You had to get a couple players back for Bradley Beal. Like, his contract's disgusting. And then Chris Paul. And Chris Paul was kind of the big piece. It was like Ayton or Chris Paul, and the Suns didn't want to trade Ayton, which they eventually did anyway. But Chris Paul was quickly settled on, and later down the line, he obviously, we'll talk about it later, but he was used for the Wizards to get Jordan Poole, so obviously a solid move for the Wizards to do that. But look, you can talk about the second round picks being great. You talk all you want about pick swaps being good down the line and flipping Chris Paul eventually. But the biggest positive from this deal is the Wizards are no longer paying Bradley Beal $50 million per year. They no longer employ the player with the worst contract in NBA history. And that's my biggest takeaway. Talk about the package they got in return. I told you I didn't care. Bradley Beal had to be moved to start this rebuild. And you wanted that to get done as quickly as possible because keeping him here meant nothing if he wasn't going to be here for the long haul. And once they moved him, I knew that, okay, this is going to take a while, but the rebuild has started. And it signaled a lot of things. It signaled the rebuild starting. It signaled KP, kind of the writing on the wall, he'll probably be moved. It signaled there's a lot of money open for Kuzma, but it could also be, okay, why would Kuzma return to DC to play on a tanking team? He should just get money from like an Indiana or a Sacramento. And it also opened up to, okay, this pick this year is huge, and next year's pick is big too. And a lot of things. But the fact of the matter is, this Bradley Beal trade was a home run. I thought the Wizards, honestly, some of the packages for Bradley Beal were like Tyler Hero and a first round pick from Miami. Like bloated salaries from Milwaukee for Bradley Beal, and they had no first round picks, only like a 2030. And this, the Suns package was elite. Like I said, just get Bradley Beal off the Wizards, move on, start to rebuild. That's exactly what Winger did. Fuck it, like 30 days into the job, already traded Beal, already better than Tommy Shepard right then and there. So once Bradley Beal gets moved, literally. That happens on June 18th. This all happens really fast. 3 days later, the Wizards engage in trade talks with the Boston Celtics surrounding Kristaps Porzingis. And what's crucial about this is KP was in line for a lucrative contract extension, $25 to $30 million per year. And obviously, once you traded Beal, it didn't make sense for the Wizards to pay him. However, he had a player option. And in order to be traded, especially to a team like Boston trying to compete, he needed to opt in or out. And the deadline was to opt in was midnight. So essentially, a deal needed to be made before midnight. And at about 7 p.m., honestly, earlier, a little earlier in the day, Michael Winger and company decided, look, we're going to work with KP. Where do you want to go? I want to go to Boston. Boston wants me. Let's make that work. They bring in a third team to make it work, the Los Angeles Clippers. And the Wizards were going to get, I think, the 30th pick, Marcus Morris and Amir Coffey. And that was all going to be for KP. But it fell through. And I don't know why, but it did. And so then we were scrambling. Everyone was like, oh, you usually don't see trades fall through like that. So, okay, now it's like 10:45. We have about an hour 15 to make a trade work for KP. We don't want to lose him for nothing. And look, if the Wizards didn't have a move in place, KP probably opts out of that player option and gets traded, or and doesn't get traded, just walks for free, signs with Boston. But both sides really wanted to make it work monetarily so Boston can make it work, but also because the Wizards didn't want to lose him for nothing. So they brought in, thankfully, Memphis wanted to join into the fold. You bring Memphis in, and Memphis decides, okay, we'll throw Marcus Smart in the ring. So essentially, the Wizards gave up Kristaps Porzingis, and in return got Tyus Jones, Gallinari, Mike Muscala, and the number 35 pick in the draft. And that's the package there, and it seems very underwhelming for a guy of KP's caliber. At least the first round pick you'd expect if Daniel Gafford got that. But based on the fact that Boston knew that Washington, it was either lose him or get something in return, they'll take what they can get, especially with the deadline. And also the fact that the Wizards knew that as well. Excuse me. They knew that they weren't going to get ample value, but they knew anything was better than nothing. So this was the package that's agreed upon. However, I feel like it doesn't tell the full story of the package because there's been so many moves made since then, including the guys that Washington received, that I have to revise the package to be more up to date. So if you look at the KP trade right now, after all the moves that have happened since then, the Wizards traded Kristaps Porzingis to Boston and in return got Marvin Bagley, Tyus Jones, who's now an unrestricted free agent, so he could walk. A 2025 and 2026 second round pick via the Pistons, which will hopefully be pretty high, and a 2026 and 2027 second round pick via Chicago. Marvin Bagley and the second round picks from Detroit were traded to Washington for Gallinari and Muscala, two guys that were out of the rotation in Washington and were going to leave after the offseason anyway, to get multiple second round picks and a guy in Marvin Bagley that's still pretty young and, you know, could be something. That's a bargain deal. So that's another great deal from Winger and Dawkins. And then you look at the 35th pick. The Wizards obviously wanted Vucevic. Maybe they thought they could get him later, which they did. And they traded the 35th pick to Chicago for two more second round picks. That's a great deal as well. I'd always take two second round picks for one. And look, that's the positives of this. What would have made this move even better is if Michael Winger decided to move Tyus Jones at the deadline. And look, they could sign and trade him, like has been speculated this offseason. And if they do that, then we'll reassess and I'll apologize to them. But I'm still holding out on that being their worst move so far as Winger's worst move, obviously, is a front office. Same with Dawkins, is not capitalizing on Jones's value when it was probably, you know, the peak of his career. And I'm not saying he could have gotten a first. That would have been great. But there's guys like Monte Morris went for multiple second round picks to the Minnesota Timberwolves. You're telling me Monte Morris is better than Tyus Jones? No. You could have gotten a lot for Tyus Jones, even if it's not a first. And it's better than nothing if he walks. And I'd prefer he walk because I want Jordan Poole to start a point guard, and I don't want Tyus Jones clogging up minutes, even as a backup. So I think right now, if even if you look at this and Tyus walks, Bagley and four second round picks for Porzingis, it's underwhelming. It definitely is. However, when you consider that KP would have literally just said, I'm opting out, I'm signing with Boston, you get nothing, this looks a lot better. Because look, see, yeah, second round picks aren't great. Marvin Bagley's not that good. He's a bust. It's better than nothing, especially the picks. Four second round picks for free, pretty much because KP was walking anyway, isn't a bad deal. It's the best you were going to get. So you got to consider that when you analyze Dawkins and Winger's move here. And honestly, look, I like it. I think they should have done something with Jones, like I mentioned. But at the end of the day, it's pretty similar to Beal. It's like, all right, good trade. Who do we get? Because we started a rebuild and we're trying to suck. And you don't want to bring back great players in return for these guys. You want expiring deals, young players, and draft picks. And they kind of did that with the first two moves in trading Beal and KP. And look, if we had a proactive GM at the deadline, the Wizards would have four first-round picks from a team like Philly and four pick swaps if they traded Bradley Beal at peak value. They would have multiple first-round picks, maybe even one extra first-round pick and some young players if they moved KP at the deadline last year instead of going and doubling down. A lot could be said about the former regime, but we're here to talk about Winger. And look, an underwhelming return for KP, yes, but when you consider he could have walked for nothing, I will take it. So that happens on the 21st, pretty much the 20th into the 21st, but you know what I mean. And then when you look at the Jordan Poole trade, June 22nd, literally the very next day, Washington decides, look, we got a 38-year-old Chris Paul here. He's at a latter stage of his career. Yes, future Hall of Famer, but you saw in Phoenix in the playoffs the year before, like he's not like that anymore. Still has some left in the tank, but he's not coming to Washington to endure another rebuild. He already did that in OKC. He's 38 and wants to win a ring. He's not going to sit on the Wizards the entire season and waste a year of his career. So you could either buy Chris Paul out, and yes, you'd get some money back, but you'd get nothing in return, or you could trade him and get something, which is better than nothing. And that's the theme here is Bradley Beal, something's better than nothing. It's better than him sitting here and rotting on this roster for $50 million. KP could have walked for free. Anything's better than nothing. Chris Paul could have bought him out. Anything's better than nothing. And this trade package with Golden State was way better than nothing when you consider how Washington added so much young talent and additional draft capital, the literal point of a rebuild, to move disgruntled veteran assets towards the latter part of their career that will fit other teams but don't fit your timeline and bring back young players and future draft picks. That's the name of the game. And the Wizards did that with this trade. They moved Chris Paul to the Warriors, and in return, you bring back Jordan Poole, 24-year-old point guard with tremendous upside and already an NBA champion. You bring in Patrick Baldwin Jr., I think a year removed from being the 28th pick in the draft. Ryan Rollins, a year removed from being the 44th pick in the draft. 2027 second-round pick, a 2030 first-round pick, top 20 protected, and $3.5 million in cash. So, essentially, Michael Winger took a player that would have been released for no value and flipped him for this 24-year-old point guard with great upside, two very young sophomore players, and a second and first-round pick for a guy they would have cut. That sounds like a great move to me. And you can analyze how the players have done that the Wizards got back since then. Jordan Poole struggled really badly up to the trade deadline this year when he was playing out of position under Wes Unseld Jr. Ryan Rollins was released. He was doing more stealing at target than stealing on the court. There was Patrick Baldwin Jr. who hasn't developed the way many fans have hoped. But look, nonetheless, Rollins and Baldwin, I don't care. They weren't the main attractions to this deal. Jordan Poole was. And if you look at how he played down the stretch when he was at his natural position of point guard, playing in a better system under Brian Keefe than he was under Wes Unseld Jr., and you factor in how much he talked about just playing freely, how much he thought playing under Keefe was so much better than playing under Wes, being a point guard and still learning at 24, like, he's going to be better. He's still developing. People don't realize that. Just because he had great early success in Golden State and won a ring, that doesn't mean he's peaked. He's still learning, especially playing point guard, a starting role, and he's only going to get better. And when you look at it like that, this trade looks a lot better. Even if the Wizards literally traded Chris Paul for a second-round pick and top 20 first-round pick, I literally would have said yes. Like, that's what I was expecting. And literally what I was expecting was maybe a salary filler and maybe two second-round picks or a first-round pick. But, like, they got all this for him, and it was perfect. So, look, it's the name of the game. Like I keep saying, Michael Winger kept turning nothing into something, and that's not easy to do, especially in a tough league like the NBA. So you got to commend him for that. So once they trade for Poole, literally like 3 hours later, they have to go up to the podium and make some picks. And look, what I will commend any GM for, and I had Matt Moderno on last episode, and he said this, and I completely agree. When you have your guy, trade up and get him. Like, if you really believe in that guy, enough to where I would be willing to move future assets, and it doesn't matter how big or small, I'm all for it. And I completely agree. Look, the Wizards didn't give up much. They traded a future second round pick. I believe it was via Phoenix, and they moved up one spot. Moving up one spot for only a second round pick to get the guy you want is huge. And it's not that expensive either. And they draft Bilal Coulibaly. And I'm going to tell you a couple things about why I like this before even talking about Bilal. I like that this GM and front office didn't draft like the last one where they literally just used ESPN's big board and said, oh, we have the 10th pick. Oh my God. ESPN has Johnny Davis at 10. Well, Bleacher Report also has Johnny Davis at 10. He must be good. He must be great. He can't shoot and he probably can't play point guard or shooting guard, but like ESPN has him at 10, so let's take him at 10. That's not the case anymore. Bilal Coulibaly was outside the lottery in certain draft boards all the way up to like the last couple days before the draft. And even then, he was outside the top 10 in some boards. But the Wizards brought him in for a workout, the only team that did, and they were like, this is the guy. He's better than the other guys here. And we're gonna move up and we're gonna take him. And a lot of people were like, well, why did if the Pacers just wanted Jarace Walker all along, like they said, why would you move up? Well, the Utah Jazz, as it was reported, were going to move up from, I think they had 12, and jump the Wizards to get Bilal because they also really wanted him. But Indiana was like, well, look, you're gonna have to give me something, or I'm gonna give this pick to Utah for a second round pick or something. So the Wizards said, fine, I'll give you my pick and we'll move up. And I love that. First and foremost, that they got their guy, a late riser, but a guy that's great at defense, a guy that projects to be really good in the future. Not now, but eventually he'll be great and there's no rush. And you move up to get him. So I love that. And look, Bilal's stats won't jump off the page, but if you watched him, it speaks for itself. The physical traits, the athleticism, the 7'4 wingspan. He's still growing. He's up to 6'9 now. The ability to defend 1 through 4, guard the best player on the other team every night, him and Danny both, and all that at 19 years old. All that. A year ago, he was playing on the B team for the Metropolitans in France. Not even on Wemby's team, the B team. And now, after a year in the league, he looks like he's going to be a huge piece for this team. Already very happy with that Bilal pick as Wenger's first pick as president of basketball ops. And then you move on to Tristan Vucevic. And look, the Wizards' second round draft pick history is absolutely disgusting. I like they for some reason, GMs when they're with the Wizards, they forget how to draft in the second round, which is crazy. But that's the case. I'm gonna read you off the last couple of second round picks for the Wizards, and this will just show you how important it is that Wenger was able to hit on, and I don't want to say hit on, because Tristan Vucevic is only like basically 15 games in, but he already looked way better than a lot of these players. So look, Yannick Nzosa, 2022, 54th pick. Nzosa hasn't played an NBA game, hasn't even. I don't even think he's in like a top tier foreign league. Like Matt Modano did an article like 2 or 3 months ago on Bolts Forever. So check it out if you want to hear about what he's doing right now with what Yannick Nzosa is doing. But it was a draft and stash at 54 when there was still talent there. And look, when you're trying to contend in 2022, you need the picks. Why are you taking a draft and stash? Stupid. 2021, Isaiah Todd, 31. So basically a first round pick here. You had the first pick of the second round, and you took a perennial G leaguer, didn't go to college. I never thought Isaiah Todd would be anything, and he sucked. He was terrible. Like look, in Washington's 2023 season finale, Isaiah Todd had 2 for 14 shooting night. He sucks. And the Wizards drafted him 31. Cassius Winston, 53, another guy who was barely played and really only played on the 2020 team because the team sucked. Admiral Schofield, another guy that barely played, stunk it up, and got traded. Yusuf Sanin, never played in a game in the league. Terrible pick. Aaron White, 49th. I don't think he appeared in an NBA game. And before he even did that, the Wizards traded him to Brooklyn anyway. Glenn Rice Jr., 35th, not that great with the Wizards. He played 16 games in Washington. The last good second-round pick was Tomas Satoransky in 2012. 2012, that's 12 years ago, was the last good second-round pick for the Washington Wizards. And literally the first second-round pick of the Michael Winger era looks better than all of those players that I listed prior to Tomas Satoransky. How crazy is that? So you take Vucevic at 42. He comes over from Partizan when you didn't expect. I thought he'd be, you know, not play the entire season. Averages 8.5 points and 3.6 rebounds over, you know, the first 15 games. Looks like he belongs and can stretch the floor. So look, these are two guys that aren't going to be unbelievable now, but they could develop into something special. And they're really good guys to build around and very intriguing. And if you look at the Wizard draft history, if you look at Johnny Davis, Yannick Nzosa, Yusuf Sanin, Aaron White, like it's a pretty good spot to be in with Koulibaly and Vucevic. So that's the draft. Now I want to talk about some of the team-friendly contracts that they somehow negotiated. These literally seem like highway robbery right now. You look at Kyle Kuzma, a guy many around the league expected to garner $30-plus million per year. Annually, $30 million for Kyle Kuzma. The Wizards signed him 4 years, $90 million. An average of, what is that, like $23 million, 22.5 basically per year. And my favorite part of the Kuzma deal is the descending value, the same as Denny Avdia's. Every single year with Kyle Kuzma, his contract gets cheaper and cheaper. So by the third year, he's making $21.5 million. And by the last year, he's making less than 20 million at 19.5. And I think the Wizards were smart in doing this because Kyle Kuzma's 28. The rest of the young core is much younger. Kyle Kuzma's sort of in that prime of his career, and a lot of teams covet him. And so when you're coveting him when he's in year three and year four of his contract, a guy like that with championship pedigree making $20 million per year, easy to trade for, easy to fit into your roster, team player. Like, he checks all those boxes for contenders. So I think the writing's on the wall for the fact that Kuz will be traded probably in that third or fourth year. Honestly, maybe even this offseason. But the fact that they were able to negotiate, like, most people were talking about Kuzma 3 years, $30 million, or 4 years, $120 million. Like, that was the basis contract before they signed him. They got him for 4 years, $90 million. Not 3 years, 4 years, $90 million. Terrific work. Can't commend Winger and Dawkins enough for what they did here. So that's the Kuzma extension. Unbelievable value. And then you look at Denny Avdia, which is honestly, like, I feel badly for Denny because he like low-key is worth double this now in the way that he played this season and the way the market's shaping up for 3-and-D wings that can really lock down on defense that you need in the playoffs that have great size. Like, He's that guy. And the Wizards signed him 4 years, $55 million. I laugh at it now. I laugh at it because it's so funny and so funny that this is the deal. And it's even funnier that people thought it was a ridiculous deal in the first place. I mean, you got to think about Denny Avdia before this breakout season. Many Wizards fans were calling him a bust. Many in the NBA, you know, league sources or, you know, front offices had given up on him, didn't think he'd ever develop a shot, thought he'd always be fouling on defense, wouldn't develop a left hand, wouldn't be able to finish at the rim. He literally solved all of those problems this year. And I mean, the fact that he's getting paid $15 million the next couple of years, and it's ascending value. So, like, by the end, it's like around 12 to 13 per year for a guy that is so highly coveted around the league. I mean, you look at if I ask the team, like, you're complete, what else do you need? Like an OKC, like a Jaden McDaniels or a Herb Jones or a Trey Murphy, like guys that are tall, can play defense, and can shoot the three. And Denny's not a knockdown shooter, but he shot 37.5 from three, his best season easily of his career. Averaged career highs across the board in points, rebounds, assists, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, free throw percentage, all of that. All of that career highs. So, look, Will Dawkins, Michael Winger went out on a limb, and they made a bold choice to say, look, a lot of people might not want to invest 50 plus million guaranteed in a guy that hasn't shown an ability to shoot the outside jumper and has a lot of issues in his game. But we're going to do it. He's 22. He's still developing, and we're going to bank on his upside, and we're going to bank on let's get in front of it and be proactive. And boy, did Denny Avdija make them look good on this. Like I said, I think Denny Avdija's four-year deal would look something like Kuzma's now, like 4 years, $85 million, or 4 years, $90 million. Like, that's how much money. You save like $40 million from getting out in front and being proactive. I always talked about Tommy Shepard. I always said he's never proactive. He's always reactive. He's always late to the party. He's never seeing things before they happen, and they get fucked over because of it. And this regime is already way more proactive, as shown in signing Denny Avdija to a big deal when nobody thought they should, and now they look like geniuses compared to the rest of the league. Easily the best signing that this front office has made, and probably will be for a couple of years. And when you consider the fact that Denny Avdija has now gone from a disgruntled asset that many people call the bust to arguably the Wizards' most coveted trade asset, could garner 2 to 3 first-round picks and some young talent from a team like OKC that has so many picks, has the salary to fill, and needs a guy like Denny Avdija. There's so many teams that need him, and they could offer 2 to 3 first-round picks for a guy that, you know, you didn't want to give an extension to and you call the bust. Michael Winger saw right through that. He knows talent. He knows ball. And the Denny Avdija extension shows that. So, like, I can't talk enough about their trades, but also about their unbelievable negotiating tactics and proactiveness in getting those contracts done with Kuz and Denny. Can't say enough about those. And then you move on to the trade deadline. And there's two things I want to talk about with this trade deadline. There's a move that happened and a move that didn't happen. And that's kind of what I want to talk about here. The move that happened, we'll start with that, is the Daniel Gafford trade. Washington traded Daniel Gafford to the Mavericks for Rashawn Holmes and a first-round pick, which happened to turn out to be number 26. So for Rashawn Holmes and the 26th pick, Washington traded Gafford. It seems like arguably the biggest win-win trade of the season. I feel like maybe Siakam with Toronto. I mean, Toronto gets a really good draft capital, the best return they could have, and Indiana's in the conference final. But also, the Mavericks are in the conference final. They only gave up a late first for him and Holmes for salary filler. And Gaff's been an integral part in that. They're 3 wins away from reaching the NBA finals right now, one up against the Wolves at the time I'm recording this. Great trade for the Mavericks. I'm happy for Gafford, obviously, one of my favorite Wizards when he was here. But it's a great move for the Wizards, too. And like I talk about all the time, you got to be proactive and not reactive. Daniel Gafford was in the midst of a career season. Yeah. Why would you trade Daniel Gafford? You know, he's still pretty young. He can maybe be a part of the Wizards' future. No. He's on a great contract now, but by the time the Wizards are great, he's going to want a lot more. And this is kind of that peak value we're talking about, where he's having a great year. That's huge. He's at the best he's going to be. He's at his max value. Move him now on a great contract, only $13 million a year. They did that, and they picked up another first-round pick, a guy in Holmes that, yes, he'll have pick up his player option. It's $12 million. You don't want to pay it, but what are you going to do? The first-round pick is what you wanted. You can kind of, with that first-round pick, hopefully draft a guy similar to Daniel Gafford to play center. He's a lot younger. He's going to be on a rookie deal for 4 to 5 years, and, maybe he's better than Daniel Gafford. You never know. So this is a great move, and I was happy with it. And look, it always sucks to trade players that you like when you're rebuilding, but you also got to see through it and understand that they're not going to be here for the long haul, and you got to maximize on their value, and the Wizards did that. Now, that's a great move at the deadline. The move they didn't make that I don't like is the Tyus Jones staying in D.C., not being traded move. I thought it made no sense. If you asked me, you have $10,000 to bet on who you absolutely think on the Wizards is going to be traded, I would have put it all on Tyus Jones. I would have literally deposited another $10,000 and put it on Tyus Jones, because it all lined up. Like, he's a guy having a career season, best assist to turnover ratio in the NBA each of the last 6 years, the literal definition of a backup point guard that I want on my championship contending team. And there were plenty of teams that needed a backup point guard. You talk about a team like Philadelphia, I thought he'd get moved to. Minnesota, I definitely thought was in play. They ended up trading for Monte Morris. Like, there were teams that would covet Tyus Jones, and they decided not to move him. The report was maybe they didn't get a first, and that's all they were going to look for, and they didn't want to give it up for less. But he's an unrestricted free agent. It doesn't make sense to sign him, to re-sign him when he's 28, past in his prime, but probably be past it by the time the Wizards get good. And he's also eating up minutes and could hinder the development of other guys that need that run. So I didn't get it. And look, maybe they didn't get the offers. And look, I can only say so much because I'm not in the front office with Winger. I don't know what the conversations are. But I do know that most Wizards fans are with me in that they should have moved Tyus. And they didn't. And look, I think it would have made the KP trade look a lot better. You would have possibly picked up more second-round picks. Anything. It's the same thing I've been saying all episode. Anything's better than nothing. If a guy's going to walk for free and you give me a second-round pick, yes, I'll take it. I mean, it's better than nothing. And the fact that they didn't move him and capitalize on that value, you know, I thought that was kind of a, you know, a self-inflicted wound. Like, they could have gotten something for him. So, love the Gaff trade, but I really didn't like the fact that they didn't move Jones. And then you talk about some additional moves that no one's going to talk about, but sickos like me that watch every game and know a lot about this team. And that's kind of the fringe two-way signings that have paid dividends. And look, Jared Butler, Justin Champagne, you got to talk about them. Two-way guys that eventually got converted to standard NBA deals due to terrific play, really shining through. I mean, first was Butler, basically played himself into the backup point guard conversation for next season behind Poole. And Justin Champagne, who was bouncing around the league, found a spot with the Wizards and quickly got converted because he was terrific. Those games against Chicago, against Boston, like, he was great. And he is a standard deal, both of them now, and they look poised to play a role and make the roster next season. And you kind of got to find some of those guys when you're rebuilding. Like, Aaron Wiggins in OKC, like, when he was coming out of Maryland, people thought he should stay another year because he wouldn't get drafted and he wouldn't stick in the league. But you get a guy like that, you sign him on a two-way, you convert him, you bring him in, and Aaron Wiggins is one of the biggest players on OKC right now in terms of coming off the bench. You know, there's so many of these guys that you can sign to contribute. Like, look at Derek Jones. He was like a two-way guy a couple years ago, and now he's dominating for the Mavericks on both ends. These guys and these signings might not look big now, but it is nice to see that Dawkins and Winger have an eye for talent and can spot guys like Butler and Champagne. Anyone can go up to the podium and pick Wembanyama one, but give me the guy that can find the undrafted free agents in addition to drafting well at the actual NBA draft. Like, I want that guy in my front office, and I think Michael Winger is that guy, and I think Will Dawkins is as well. And I think the Champagne and Butler signings are underrated. They're not talked about enough, and they're very impressive to be able to spot talent like that. Look, that's kind of the biggest moves of Michael Winger era a year after he was hired by the Wizards. And what I want to conclude with is this. For a team that has been constantly mocked for being the definition of mid, for being the definition of mediocre, for being in constant purgatory, the Wizards now look primed for a title contending run in the future. And it's not going to happen overnight. It won't happen in the next 2 or 3 years. But in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, they're going to be in that conversation at the top of the East and at the top of the NBA. And Michael Winger is the main reason for that. And that's all I'm saying. I'm saying all this 1 year into his job. I know he's putting the pieces together to make this team good for the future. I'm getting excited, genuinely excited talking about it, because I miss playoff basketball. I miss like, you know, living and dying by wins and losses. You know, it's not fun to literally load up the NBA app and just be like, we win, nice, we lose, all right, good, I don't care. I just want to look for if this player is going to play well. Like, I don't want to have to, like, incentivize myself to watch these games. I want to genuinely be into, oh, we lost. Like, that's a devastating loss. I haven't felt devastation after a Wizards loss since 2017. Like, even in the 2018 run when they lost to the Raptors in round one, like, They were the 8 seed. They barely got in. John Wall was, you know, very, probably the worst I've seen him since, you know, his prime years. It looked like he was declining. You know, you're going to have to pay Bradley Beal. You know, what are you going to do with Otto Porter? Like, that team was not going anywhere, but the 2017 team was. And so the Game 7 loss, I would say, is probably like that last heartbreaking defeat for the Wizards. And I miss that feeling, and I think, you know, it won't happen next year, and it won't happen, and maybe it'll happen the year after that, but Will Dawkins and Michael Winger have put this team in a position to you know, have that fan base energized and to bring playoff basketball back to DC and to have fans in the stands and, you know, people genuinely excited about what's happening in Washington. You know, that's what I'm excited for, and that's why I had to come on here and just rave about Winger and what he's done. You know, for a team that really, you know, during those prime Wall Beal years, maybe they would have made the conference finals, but never a thought of, oh, we can beat the Cavs, we can get by LeBron. It was always, okay, let's get past the second round, and then once we make the conference finals for the first time since 79, okay, like, if we lose, we lose, that's fine. No, F that. Like, I want a team built for success, for an NBA championship. You don't play this game to make the Eastern Conference Finals. You don't play this game to make the second round. You play games to win the title. And for the Wall Beal years, like, I never thought that we had, apart from that 2017 team, and not even then, that we really had a true shot at winning the title. But hopefully with this rebuild and waiting all this time to do it the right way, the Wizards will finally have that feel of, okay, like, this could be the team. This team's kind of, oh, you know, they're title or bust. We're playing for a title. We're not playing for Eastern Conference Finals appearances. And that's the story with this rebuild, and that's the story that Winger has started to write. Dawkins with him too, right up there. But, you know, I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited about the future. I'm excited about the second pick. I'm excited about the pick next year. I'm excited about the trajectory of this team. And I can't tell you the last time I felt that way. And it's in big part thanks to Michael Winger and the hire a year ago today. So I had to come on here and talk about it. I hope you guys enjoy this episode of kind of taking down memory lane, reminiscing on what Michael Winger has accomplished with this franchise turnaround and this rebuild 1 year to the day. Look, I'm pumped up for the future of this team. It's not going to happen overnight, but Michael Winger and Dawkins know that. And they know to lay the groundwork for a true title contender and to build the true dynasty, it takes time. It takes years and years to build that culture, to build the core of players, the nucleus of really good front office and coaching staff people. And the Wizards are early on, but the results are looking promising, and I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued to see where it goes from here. So, again, that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate you listening. I've gotten so many kind messages lately from people that just enjoy the show and love, you know, just people doing Wizards content, because it's a tough cover right now, and you see a lot of the big media outlets don't like to talk about the Wizards because nobody really cares. But I know there's a lot of Wizards fans out there that genuinely care, that listen. And I gotta say, if you're one of the people that sends me messages on Twitter that tell me, you know, you love the show, that literally makes my entire week. So if you're one of those people, my guy Corey literally just messaged me today, so I really appreciate that, Corey. But again, that means the world to me, so thanks for that. And even if you don't and you just listen and enjoy the show, that's why I do it. Not a lot of people are covering the team. I enjoy doing it, so hopefully you enjoy, you know, my coverage as well. But that's going to do it for this episode, reminiscing on Michael Winger 1 year to the date of his hire by the Washington Wizards as president of Monumental Basketball. Pumped up for the future of this team, and I hope you guys are too. It's going to do it. Go Wiz.